Welcome in to another edition of the Future Sox Roundup. My name is Elijah Evans, and I am joined, as always, by my wonderful co-host, Jeff Cohen. We have a lot to talk about today on the Roundup. We've got some interesting news coming out of Chicago in just literally today, last night into today. In addition to plenty of minor league performances we want to highlight, we are going to kick off a new segment we're going to be doing throughout the season where we do a hitter and pitcher of the week in the minor league system, just to highlight, you know, two guys that really show out every week and just, you know, show all that they're capable of. But first, we've got a lot to discuss on the major league side of things. We have two, not just one. We initially had one, but now we have two awesome major league debuts from top 10 White Sox prospects over the next 2 days. Nick Nastrini will be starting tonight for the White Sox. We're recording this on Monday. Nick Nastrini is making the start on Monday for the White Sox. And Jonathan Cannon, we just learned about an hour ago, is going to be making the start on Tuesday for the White Sox. So that is two of the top 10 prospects in the White Sox system, two of the top pitching prospects, two guys that, you know, were in Charlotte to start the season, but both, I mean, I think Nastrini, it was always assumed, was going to be up very soon. Cannon, I didn't really, when we've talked, Jeff, I didn't really have Cannon coming up till maybe mid-season this year, but now, next thing you know, Nick Nastrini and Jonathan Cannon, two exciting pitching prospects, are going to be in Chicago, are both going to be added to the 40-man roster. We've got a lot to talk. So first of all, how are you, Jeff, and what is your initial reaction to those two making their debuts?
Well, I'm doing great. And like you, I'm blown away. You know, the Cannon assignment, the Cannon call up really is a shock, but he's been pitching great. And it was an aggressive assignment to put him in Charlotte. And you know, Elijah, I just am thinking that it's a new regime in Chicago and they're doing things different. You know, they assigned Colson to Charlotte, Cannon to Charlotte. And now they're bringing up Nastrini and Cannon, and it's just so different than what we've experienced the last few years, and I like it.
Yeah, it's really nothing like what we've, you know, been experiencing. It's super unique in a way where I think Nastrini makes a little more sense, right? As a guy who made it to Charlotte last year, right? We saw that in spring training, like he looked like a major league starter. Cannon is someone that, like you said, you know, 2-3 years ago, Cannon would have been in AAA this entire season, I think, right? Like that's, I know that might sound dramatic, but like this is not the way the White Sox run things. This is a guy who just made a few starts in Charlotte. He didn't even make it to Birmingham till the later half, the second half of 2023, right? So he finished the season in Birmingham. Struggled in Birmingham, actually, then gets assigned to Charlotte after a decent spring, makes two starts in Charlotte or three starts in Charlotte. And now here we are. He's starting for the White Sox tomorrow, making his major league debut. So I love it. I called last week on the podcast. I said, I mean, I called for like, let's see this youth, right? When is this going to happen? And then in the next 2 days, right, the last few days. So going back a little, I want to give some perspective on the 40-man roster because me and you talked a lot last week about how the 40-man is just super messy. There's not a lot of easy DFA candidates. The only real way to create flexibility is by just saying, you know what, sorry to some of these veteran relievers and moving on and changing the tune. And that's exactly what the organization just did. So Moncada went to the 60-day IL, which was expected. He was always going to move. That opened up a spot for Zach Remillard, who, you know, came up for the last 2 days. And then Brian Shaw, after a really rough start, and I said it last week, like, I don't really know why Brian Shaw's on the roster, right? Was DFA'd 2 days ago, which opened up a spot temporarily for Justin Anderson. But then today, both those two were in the newest 40-man members, right? Were both optioned with Eloy coming back and taking the spot of Remillard, and then Max Stassi being moved to the 60-day IL, which opened up that 40-man spot for Nick Nastrini to then take Justin Anderson's spot on the roster. So a lot of shuffling around. I think we both just said this before recording. I think Max Stassi, maybe his injury is significant. I think that they're just kind of pushing him back a month for the sake of letting Corey Lee get more at bats? That feels a little more accurate to me. But it opened a spot for Nastrini. And then now we're in a situation where knowing that Cannon's in Chicago to start tomorrow, that's another spot that needs to get opened up. So then you're in a situation where you either have the option to remove a Remillard or an Anderson who just got added, right? That's the simplest thing to do is just to say, you know, just to remove one of those two. Or I don't mind the idea of DFAing another reliever, just like they did with Shaw. And then if Cannon takes a spot in the rotation, you move a guy like Flexen to the bullpen if you need to, or, you know, whenever that ends up being that Clevinger comes back. It also means that likely Eric Fetty is dealing with either an injury or something going on with him that's going to cause him to miss his start tomorrow, because that would have been his start tomorrow. That's now Jonathan Cannon's.
Right. Well, it'll all be apparent 24 hours from now, but you're right. It's fascinating and a lot of moving parts early in the season.
It's just all over the place. It really is. It's interesting to me, and I don't know what that means moving forward necessarily. quickly. But what it does mean right now is two of the top 10 prospects are on the roster. And I love that because why not, right? Like we've talked about this. Nastrini and Cannon are guys that like we would love for them to go into 2025 with rotation spots locked down. And now they have pretty much an entire season to try and earn those spots, right? Like it's not, I'm not saying it's going to be great immediately. There's going to be some bumps in the road. I think both of them have some things to still figure out with their pitching, right? But they have a season now where I hope they remain in the rotation. There's a chance they don't. It would frustrate me if they don't. But at the same time, like if they perform well, they're going to force the hand of the White Sox to keep them in the major league rotation and earn a spot in next year's rotation. And that's what we want this season to be all about. We've talked about that all offseason, right?
I think you nailed it. You're right. They can pitch their way into the rotation. Otherwise, you know, Clevinger's coming and that Brad Keller's probably coming and Fetty, I guess, will be back from an injury. But yeah, I mean, you and I are hoping they pitch their way into the rotation and stay there. Yeah.
100%. I mean, they're both talented guys and we both know that, you know, they have the ability to be key pieces of the future. So let's see what they can do. I want to mention kind of in the 40-man situation, right? If they don't go with the option of just DFAing Anderson or Remillard, who are just added, then you have the option of either kind of one of the major league relievers, like a Dominic Leone potentially being DFA'd or Jared Schuster potentially maybe going back down. But then you also could maybe see a DFA of one of the minor league guys, right? I think either way you have to clear a roster spot. So I wouldn't be shocked. Hypothetically, maybe a Josimar Cusin, I think could be the one minor league guy that I could see getting the DFA just because he hasn't really taken a step forward. He's already 26, not necessarily a key. It's hard to see him being a key part of the future at this point. So I think he could maybe be the one guy I could see in the minors being DFA'd. But I think realistically, it probably is either Anderson or Remillard just because you just added them. I don't think they're going to get claimed on waivers. Maybe Anderson could get claimed on waivers, but I'm not sure. Remillard already went unclaimed earlier this offseason, right? So I don't think, I don't see a world where either of them necessarily are at risk of being lost, or even if they are lost, it's not going to hurt that much. So that might be the easiest option. But I am curious to see what happens. And more than anything, like let's see Nick Nastrini and Jonathan Cannon, right?
And you're right. The 40 man is fascinating because my guess is Brad Keller's probably going to come up. They got to create a spot for him. They might decide to bring Tukey back. But it's just getting really tricky. It's getting really tricky.
Yeah. It's super complicated. It's just, and I like the decisions made over the past week, honestly. I think, you know, pushing off Stassi and putting him on the 60 day is fine with me. I think generally, like I was happy to see the Brian Shaw designation because I think that was the right call. He wasn't really providing anything out of the bullpen. So honestly, I think the decisions made this week have been the right ones. And I think now it's just going to keep getting more complicated. But with that said, and then you've got, you know, the other aspect of like sooner than later, you're going to have to create a 40-man spot for Colson. And sooner than later, you're going to have to create a 40-man spot for, you know, whoever ends up filling out the bullpen eventually later this season, right? And maybe it is Bailey Horn, who's already on the 40-man, who gets that spot soon enough. But it's a tricky 40-man. We've talked about this over and over, and it's going to keep getting just manipulated and tweaked to make things work throughout the season, and ultimately to prioritize the prospects later in the year because the team's 2-13, right? Like this is not a team that we think is really going to do much, and that's okay. So why not Nick Nastrini and Jonathan Cannon? I'm fired up to see both of them. I think it's really a great sign to see just where they're going. But you know, for now we'll dive into the minor league stuff because that's what we're here for. But two prospects that everybody, you know, everybody listening, like you should watch some Nick Nastrini and Jonathan Cannon as long as they're with the White Sox. We don't know if they'll remain on the team, but like make sure to check out their starts because these are guys that, you know, I am very high on both of them. I've got to talk to both of them. They're both, you know, really smart pitchers and two guys that could potentially be, you know, key pieces of the future. So that's exciting stuff. We'll get into the minor league stuff now. Starting off, we're going to start off with our records, right? I want to go through the minor league teams with the White Sox. Charlotte, after a pretty decent week for Charlotte, is 5-10 now on the season. And then Birmingham had a rougher week after a really strong first week. They're 5-4 now. They started 3-0 in their first series and they went 2-4 in the second series. But a lot of good signs still out of Birmingham. Winston-Salem is 3-6. They had a bit of a rough week, but all things considered, there's some really impressive players in Winston that we're going to talk about today. And then Kannapolis is 4-5. Another losing week for Kannapolis, but again, you know, some players at both those two lower levels that are really exciting, regardless of the records there so far. So not great records all around, but like we've talked about, you know, all three of the lower levels, right? Birmingham, Winston, and Kannapolis have some really exciting prospects, and there's a lot to watch there, especially on the pitching side of things, that we've seen some awesome things so far this season from those levels. So kicking it off with our minor league hitter and pitcher of the week, our hitter of the week is none other than catcher Edgar Caro. Caro is a guy that Jeff and I are both high on. We've both been really excited. And the question with him last year when he was adjusting to AA baseball was, can he get his power back? We didn't see a lot of power from him last season. The approach is excellent. The field of hit is really strong. But the power last year was down a little bit compared to where he was in his breakout 2022 season. Safe to say, he looks like he's got some power, Jeff. Home runs this week, 9 RBIs in 4 games for Caro. So really great week from him. He had 3 home runs within 2 games. He had 2 in 1 game. One was an oppo taco. One was pole side, right? So seeing the power, both gaps, like each homer was a gap shot. So it was the opposite field gap and the pole side gap. Just really, really impressive swings from him all week. And someone that I stand by, that I've been saying for a long time, this guy's the catcher of the future. So what are your thoughts on the strong week from Caro?
Yeah, it's exciting. And, not only Caro, but spoiler alert, we're going to get into Jacob Gonzalez, hit his first home run of the season. Colson Montgomery hit his first home run of the season. All these guys that we really like are getting going.
Yeah, definitely.
Caro's really at the head of the pack. I mean, he had a phenomenal week.
Yeah, 9 RBIs in 5 games, really just driving the ball over the field. The guy, he got 4 hit by pitches, which is like kind of random and funny, but it's also a test of like pitchers are trying to avoid throwing him pitches down the middle because he was cranking the ball in the 2 games where he was getting pitches down the middle. So it was like, four for, I think he got on base at that's a pretty strong clip, I want to say. I think he got on base at just below a 500 clip with those hit by pitches factored in and the power, right? Like you're seeing the power start to show for him. And that's something that was a big question mark, I guess, going into the season was like, when's he going to tap into that power? And we saw it this weekend for 3 home runs, just really strong swings. The ball was just, all of his home runs were just really hit hard. So Caro is our hitter of the week, and I expect him to continue to be mentioned on this podcast, Jeff.
Yep. And what about the pitcher?
Pitcher of the week is Aldrin Batista. Not unlike Caro, probably someone that many of you have heard minimal about, if anything, really. I had him on my personal top 30 list for the White Sox. I believe he was around the 25, mid-20s range for me in the top 30 White Sox prospects. He was acquired last year for international signing money from the Dodgers. Him and Maximo Martinez were both brought over from the Dodgers. They needed some money for their international signing pool to bring in a big international signing. So the White Sox were able to take kind of just a flyer on Batista, right? He's not a guy who was acquired for any player, right? But with that said, Batista looks excellent. If you haven't gotten the chance, I did an interview with Kannapolis Cannonballers broadcaster Dan Helody, who kind of told me, hey, like when I asked him about some of the pitchers, he was like, Batista looks really good compared to what he did last year. And Batista got up to Kannapolis last year and looked really solid, yeah, and then proceeded to kind of get there this year. And his first start was probably one of the best starts I've seen from the organization this season so far. He threw 5 no-hit innings, eventually gave up a single hit in his 6th inning of work. He went 5 1/3, 1 hit, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts, commanding the zone with all his pitches. He was just pounding strikes. I think 3 or 4 of those 8 strikeouts were like 3 pitch strikeouts. I mean, it was dominant. It was effective. The fastballs ticked up for him. Looks like he's throwing with a little more zip than he was last year, which is what Dan Helody had mentioned to me. It really just looks like the makings of a very talented young pitcher.
Yeah, I'm bummed that they're on the road this week. I would love to catch his next start. But yeah, and all those stats you mentioned about him, 61 pitches. That's it. 61 pitches.
Yeah. I mean, it was efficient. It wasn't just dominant, but it was really efficient. He was pounding the zone and nobody was hitting it, right? So it's not like he was just pounding the zone and drawing hard contact. He was pounding the zone and nobody was even touching the ball. Like it was really dominant start to finish that start from him. I cannot wait to watch him again. I wish you were able to go see him live, but I know once he's back in town, you're going to get to see him in person because this is a guy that I don't think he's going to last long in Kannapolis. Still just 20 years old, but Batista, he looks really good. And he's someone that I think is going to be come on the radar of White Sox fans and prospect followers, because he's got some stuff and he's got some stuff and some command at that age. It's really exciting to watch. And I think, you know, he was the clear choice in my mind for pitcher of the week. And I'm looking forward to seeing his second and third starts of the season, because that was just about as good of a first start as I could have expected from Batista. Yeah. All right. Well, let's dive into our normal kind of routine here, where we go level by level. We'll start in Charlotte and we'll make our way down all the way to Kannapolis. Obviously, we mentioned Caro and Batista already, but let's highlight some of the other players who had strong weeks for the White Sox. We'll start it off, you know, in Charlotte, right? There's not much to talk about in Charlotte other than one player. There's one player who definitely is the talk of the town in Charlotte so far this season, and started to kind of look like the full version and the upside of himself this week. Colson Montgomery, Jeff, what did you kind of see from him? And then once you give a little bit of your thoughts, I'll provide some context with some stats for him.
Well, the exciting thing is the power has emerged. Two home runs this week, a double. I will point out, though, that, 11 strikeouts and 26 at bats, and that just is not like Colson or the right. Colson that we've seen in the past. And again, it's a small sample, but it definitely looks like the power is starting to come. And that was the last thing we were looking for.
Exactly. I think so. Reading the stat line for him this week, you know, 5 of 23, in addition to 3 walks. So he got on base 8 times in 27 plate appearances, 2 home runs, 2 singles, and a double. 11 strikeouts, like you mentioned, right? I think the strikeout rate for him has been a little concerning. It's been really high this year, but I also think, like, this is a guy who's trying to tap into his upside, right? Like, we know he has a good plate approach. Like, we've seen that. I don't think it's something to be super worried about. I think more than anything, he's trying to use this time right now in Charlotte to do more and to try to tap into that power. And because he's trying to do that, it's resulting in a little bit more swing and miss than we're used to from him. But I'm not really that worried about it. I know this is a guy who can handle approach and understands the pitch count and understands, you know, when he's best at swinging and when he's best at holding off. And that's something we've seen from him. And we've known he's been able to do that. So I'm okay with a little more strikeouts if we start to see some of that power creep in, which we did start to see this week. I mean, that homer a few days ago, the one that was, you know, just off the bat, we're on 110 off the bat. I mean, it was just smoked. He really, you can see the strength. You can see kind of the twitch to his swing. It's also worth mentioning, right? Like all those strikeouts were, and the most of his numbers were just this weekend in the past 3 games, right? So the stats for the week don't look as good, but his past 3 games, you know, 4 hits, including 2 home runs in just over the weekend, right? So that was all of his production from the week came just these past 3 games over the weekend. So, you know, a really strong weekend. And I think I'm hoping that the last few days leads into a big week coming up for Colson, because, you know, him playing well is the reason to tune into Charlotte essentially right now.
Yeah. They're in town for 6 games, and, I can't find a second reason to go now that Cannon and Nastrini are not pitching. I mean, it's just Colson.
Yeah, especially with both Winston and Kannapolis on the road. I know you're going to be there. Basically, you're going to be on Colson Montgomery watch this week more than anything.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Anybody else you want? I know you had a few relievers you wanted to mention in Charlotte, because as we've talked about, right, like the White Sox bullpen is going to be shifting around all season, right? Like it's going to be kind of a mishmash of pitchers. Brian Shaw's gone. There's a few other guys in the bullpen that I think could be on their way out in the near future. There's a few guys in Charlotte that look pretty good out of the pen this week. Yeah.
Yeah, Frazier Ellard, 3 games, 3.1 innings pitched, 7 strikeouts, just 1 earned run. Good week for him. And Prelander Baroa, you know, he had really struggled coming into this week, and it seems like he settled down. He had 3 games.
He had 2 hits. 3 games, 2 hits. 3 innings in his 3 games, 2 hits, 3 walks, and 2 strikeouts. So no runs allowed. So that was nice.
Right. And the 3 walks were in the same inning, and he got out of the inning without giving up any runs. So definitely a step in the right direction for him. And you know, again, he's one of the few relievers down here on the 40 man, and they're going to need him in Chicago sooner than later.
Exactly. So that's a guy and someone who's acquired this offseason as like hopefully going to be part of the team this year, right? So like he looks better than he did early in the season. I still don't think he's, you know, major league ready, but considering he's on the 40 man, like sooner than later, there's going to be an opportunity for him to test out what he's got at the big league level. In addition to, you know, another guy on the 40 man, right, is Bailey Horn too, another guy who he had a pretty solid week as well. So that's another 40 man option who in two games this week allowed three innings, no runs, two hits. So another good week from Horn as well, who also could be an option to be on the White Sox, given that he's already on the 40 man. So those are some quality relievers in Charlotte. It's good to have that depth there and to know that, you know, hopefully sooner than later, some of those younger relievers in Charlotte could replace some of the vets on the roster right now.
And of course, he's not a prospect, but I think we need to mention Brad Keller only because he may be going up to Chicago sooner than later. In his first start, he pitched five innings, six hits, two earned runs, five strikeouts. He's apparently already stretched out pretty good, and he might not be around too long.
Right. The question with Keller is then what role does he fit in Chicago? Because if you're committing 40-man spots to Nastrini and Cannon, they're going to be locked in 40-man. You're not getting rid of them, right? So then what is Keller, maybe a long reliever? I feel like at that point you just move Chris Flex into the rotate to the bullpen. So I don't know. That's interesting to mention. And I think it's Keller's good depth to have, but I don't know necessarily what he serves other than potentially an injury replacement, right?
Yeah. And you don't know. Maybe he's got one of those contracts where if he doesn't get called up, by a certain date, he's out of here. So
that's
he may force their hand.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So moving on from Charlotte, that's about all we've got there. Going into Birmingham, who, you know, like I said, a little bit of a rough week for Birmingham in terms of the results. But there's just some really, really fun players in Birmingham right now. I think it's important to mention like that team has just talent top to bottom right now. I think it's pretty clear when you look at the roster, like there's players that are worth watching every single day in Birmingham right now. So let's talk a little bit about guys that we didn't talk about last week. We're going to repeat a few of the same names because a few of the same names have continued to be great. But in terms of guys we didn't talk about last week, I want to start with Mason Adams, who got his first start of the year early this past week. Adams was really, really good in his first four innings of work. I think the stats are definitely skewed when you look at them initially because he had a really rough fifth inning before coming out of the game. But four just excellent innings from Mason Adams to start his season with Birmingham. You know, stuff happens, right? He started to get hit around a little bit. He lost control of his stuff a little towards that last game of the or that last inning he pitched. But in general, Adams looked ready for Double-A baseball, which is what I was hoping to see coming off a season where he just only got three games there in Birmingham last year. And he looked prepared and ready to pitch at that level. That was my assessment.
I absolutely agree. Yep.
And then kind of some of the other pitchers, right? So like we've talked about, Jeff, like this rotation in Birmingham is awesome. This is every day I find myself like wanting to watch the starting pitcher in Birmingham because they're just, it's a deep rotation. It's a good rotation. It's just, it's all around just like a really, really good team. And that makes it easy to watch them. So beyond Adams, right, we got two more starts out of, I'm trying to pull up the who started which day, but we got more starts out of Thorpe Iriarte, and then Kai Bush made his first start. So we'll start with Kai Bush because that was his first start of the season. Five innings, four hits, one run, two walks, and seven strikeouts for Kai Bush. And the one run was on a solo homer. Bush is someone that, you know, we've talked about, right? Like he struggled last year a lot. He didn't look like himself for much of last year when he got acquired by the White Sox. A really encouraging first start, in my opinion, from Bush. I think a lot of good signs. Seven strikeouts is more than we saw from him at all last year in his few starts with the White Sox or with the Barons. And then, you know, just continuing to look a little bit better with his command, right? It wasn't great. 75 pitches, 47 strikes. He's still a guy that needs to find a bit more consistency with his command. But overall, you know, seven strikeouts, only two walks. Like he was creating with. The slider looked better. It looked sharper than it did last year to me. And generally, you know, Bush is someone that I think just needs to continue to get innings under his belt and just work on what he's been working on and find that groove, right?
Yep. Definitely a step in the right direction. But you're right. I mean, the entire Birmingham staff is fascinating. With Thorpe and Iriarte and Bush and Adams. And, you know, we didn't even mention Jake Eater. It wasn't his best week, but, you know, certainly must watch baseball.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Thorpe is like we talked about, like Nastrini and Cannon, right? Like Thorpe's right behind him. I know he's only in Double A right now, but Thorpe is knocking on the door at this point, the way he's throwing and the way that, you know, his floor, which we've mentioned before, like the way he pitches is somebody that's going to survive at every level. He might not thrive at the major league level this season, but like he could go up next month and at least give you some innings for the White Sox, right? So Thorpe is someone that his second start this week, 6 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 7 Ks. That's coming off a game where he did basically the same thing, even better actually the week before. So two great starts from Thorpe, who now rocks a 0.82 ERA so far this season in his first two starts, right? So that's a guy who, you know, he looks good. Like he looks really good, Jeff. I think Thorpe is, especially with, actually, to be honest with you, I mean, could he be in Charlotte this week? Like that might not be crazy. With Cannon and Nastrini both on their way out, like could Thorpe be starting Wednesday in Charlotte? I don't know. I'm not sure what you think about that, but I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, that's interesting. You may be onto something in part because, you know, with all the problems in Chicago, the Charlotte roster is a mess.
Exactly.
And, you know, Nastrini was supposed to pitch tomorrow and Cannon was supposed to pitch the next day. So you're right. I mean, I don't know who's going to fill all these innings.
It could be just some of the veteran guys kind of piecing it together with the bullpen, but I would not be surprised to see Drew Thorpe on the way. I think he, of the guys in Birmingham, he's the most ready for Charlotte. I think he's going to be in the big leagues this year. So I would not be surprised to see Thorpe bumped up to Charlotte this week just because their roster is weak there. And he's proven, I mean, I know it's two starts, right? But like he's dominated in two starts in Birmingham. So it's not like there's really nothing he has to prove there necessarily. I know you want a few more games under his belt, but with Cannon and Nastrini on their way up, I think Thorpe could be headed to Charlotte this week, honestly. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, and again, you know, like we said, it's the new White Sox. They're not just taking forever to move guys from one level to the next. They're moving guys when they think they're ready. So you're right. That gives credence to the fact that it very well could happen.
Right. I really would not be surprised. And then the last guy just mentioning, I know we mentioned him briefly, Jairo Iriarte as well. Another start this week where he, you know, it's, we talked about this when he got traded to the White Sox in that Dylan Cease deal, right? Like it's the command for him. It's going to come down to if he can command and if he can command consistently. Iriarte was really effective with 7 strikeouts and 4 innings this week, but also walked 4 guys. So it's with him, it's just a matter of command. He's not getting hit. Like he gave up no hits in that game. He pitched 4 innings and didn't give up a single hit. He just walked 4 guys. So it's with him, it's truly just command. Iriarte's stuff plays. He is not the type of guy that's going to get rocked. Like he can limit contact very well. He creates a lot of whiff. He's just got to get those breaking balls, especially over the plate a little bit more often and for strikes, because then he's forced to throw the fastball in places he doesn't want to throw it. So it's if he can command better, like the stuff is very, very clear to me through two starts for him. And he looks good, right? Like that's no earned runs in his first two starts, 4 innings each start. They're taking their time. They're not pushing him too much in terms of the pitch count, but Iriarte, it all comes down to command. If he can continue to find that command this year in Birmingham, another guy that we could realistically see in this rotation next season.
Yeah.
Going over to the offensive side in Birmingham, it's fun. I mean, it's a fun lineup. I think we mentioned some of these guys last week, so we don't have to spend too much time on them. We already talked about Caro, but Terrell Tatum and Brooks Baldwin at the top of this lineup for the Barons is just really fun players. They're both just versatile. They both are fast and twitchy and kind of just guys that continue to do their job. I don't think either one is going to blow you away with their power, or neither of them have elite hit tools by any means, but they're both strong defensive players. They both have some speed. They both have some good contact skills, smart plate approaches, right? So those two have continued to mash this season. They look great. They're both, you know, they both have OPSs just under 1,000. Same for Wilfred Veras, who we talked about a lot last week. A little bit of a step back from his first week. He didn't have a great week this week, but still a guy that's hitting well. We got to see a little taste of some of the other guys that we expect to be strong players for Birmingham. You know, Tim Elko had a homer this week, had some really hard hit balls. Jacob Burke had a pretty solid week. He had a few nice hits, nothing crazy. He's still kind of adjusting to that level, I think. And then, you know, the other guy that's worth mentioning right in Birmingham, I know this, I've seen a lot of dialogue on this, is Brian Ramos is really struggling. Unfortunately, he's kind of, you know, in a super rough slump to start the season. He seems just a little overwhelmed at the plate and he's like kind of off his timing, I think. I'm not sure exactly what's going on with him. He just really hasn't been able to find it so far this year. But someone that, you know, if Ramos gets going, that lineup is just, oh my goodness. I mean, seriously.
Caro, Ramos, Veras, and Elko. Elko's got to hit six because of all that power in front of him. Yeah,
exactly. So, you know, I really hope Brian Ramos finds it because, again, like that's of all those guys, he's potentially the best hitter, honestly, and from the last season at least, right? So I think that's someone who is going to find his groove, but it's really exciting to see Caro, Tatum, Baldwin, and Veras hitting the way they're hitting so far. Those four of them have just been excellent in their first few weeks, and I think we'll keep trending that direction. So Birmingham, a lot of fun, a lot of players that we're keeping an eye on there. All right, let's shift over to Winston then. I want to let you kind of lead this one off, Jeff. You were in person for Noah Schultz's start this weekend. Give me the rundown on the interesting, good but complicated start from Schultz.
It's bizarre, Elijah. He started out mostly throwing fastballs. I don't think the off-speed pitch was his slider. I think it must have been the changeup. He was playing the Pirates high A team, and their number one draft pick from 2022, Tamar Johnson, was on the team. And he got one of Schultz's breaking pitches and hit it for a pretty hard single in the first. But other than that, Schultz got out of the first. But then the second inning, what was it? Hit, batter, walk. The third, I believe. Yeah. And I just never saw those first couple of innings, that crisp slider that I'm accustomed to seeing. And I don't know what that was. I really am looking forward to getting back to Winston in 2 weeks to find out what was going on with that pitch selection. Because I guess it was about the fourth inning, he started throwing that slider, and it was vintage Schultz. And it took him 10 pitches to strike out three guys. And then he had two more strikeouts. He had six strikeouts in a row. When he was on, he was really on. And when he was off, I'm just not sure how much of it was a lack of control and how much of it was pitch selection.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that about the pitch selection, because I did, looking at the thing, it was interesting, right? That third inning, it was six straight runners allowed on, or five straight runners allowed on base between mostly walks and hit by pitch, and then there was one or two hits mixed in, right? I think two hits mixed into that mix, but basically allowed four straight runs and then struck out three batters in a row to get out of the inning, came back out in the fourth, struck out three batters in a row again, those six straight strikeouts, like you mentioned. So a really odd start, but like nothing that I'm discouraged by, I would say, right? Like it was funky. It was weird. I think you're right. Like the going away from the slider was a bit odd considering how good that slider is, but it also could just be partially like trying to tweak some things and trying to see how the changeup plays and trying to see how he can work off, you know, not just relying on the slider, right? There's things to figure out with his arsenal still, where I think it could have been partially he was struggling a little, but it was also partially just experimental to an extent, maybe. It's hard to know. And I'm very curious to see when you get to see his next start in person in 2 weeks, just what kind of everything looks like, how he made adjustments and everything. And I'll be watching his away game this week for sure, just to see how things look. But in general, right, like he still showed the stuff that was Noah Schultz for sure. That first start with 10 strikeouts was dominant. And the second start, like you still saw the stuff was apparent, right?
And he's throwing the ball two or three ticks harder than last year. Last year, he told me, he said, my fastball is usually 94. And he was 96, 97 consistently in this game.
Yeah, no, when I saw him in Arizona, he touched 98, and I think he grabbed 99 once in spring training when he was throwing in the backfields, and he's pretty steady 96 and above right now, which is pretty dang exciting for a guy, again, with that much run on his fastball. 96, 97 looks like 100 coming out of his arm slot with movement on it, right? So it's a great arm. Noah Schultz is truly a special pitcher, even with a little bit of that blippy third inning, right? Like this is a guy who we know he can be truly elite if things keep going this direction for him.
And again, I'll say it every week, it's the best slider I've seen in the minor leagues. It's just wipeout.
You heard it here first, Jeff Cohen, the best slider in the minor leagues, Noah Schultz. I don't think that's a crazy statement. I really think there's a chance that's accurate. Going on to a few of the other guys in Winston, obviously, you know, like Colson and Charlotte, Noah Schultz is the headliner in Winston-Salem right now. Like he's the one that's super fun to watch. But that pitching staff as a whole is pretty awesome. I want to move over to Tanner McDougall, who's a guy that we talked about in the offseason. Like McDougall and Peyton Paulette are two guys that we're kind of watching and saying, you know, these two guys are now a full year removed from surgery. They had last season to figure things out, to get back in the groove, to find the rhythm. now is the time to start seeing them tick up. Their stuff, their movement, their strikeouts, like we're ready to see those two start to really put it together this season. And I think they're both going to do that. McDougal in his first start of the year was excellent. Only threw four innings, but four innings, one hit, no runs, three walks, and six strikeouts. So with him, right, like a little bit of command shakiness at times, the three walks, right? But nobody was hitting him. Nobody was touching his stuff. Six strikeouts in those four innings, only one hit, right? Like it was effective. It was sharp. I didn't watch the entire start, but the stuff I got to watch, he looked good. He looked comfortable. And I think McDougal's someone that could keep taking, you know, a step forwards this year.
Right. Right. Yeah, definitely. He had the best start of the week of that staff. And you're right. It's an interesting staff. It's not the names, not the pedigree that we've got in Birmingham, but six interesting starters. You know, in addition to Schultz and McDougal, you've got Tyler Switzer, Peyton Paulette, you've got Juan Corella, who they picked up from the Yankees last year and did really well. He had a rough week this week, but he had a great season last year.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really fun rotation. I think, like we've talked about, Birmingham and Winston have, you know, those every starter in those two rotations is a legitimate prospect, right? Like it's not, there's no fillers. There's no days where you're facing someone that you don't have hope for, right? Like those are all legit prospects at both those levels. Paulette is worth mentioning. Like we said, you know, a little bit of a rough game from him in his first start, but seven Ks, right? Only threw three innings and had seven Ks. So a few homers allowed, a few walks here and there. So he only made it out of, you know, the third inning, right? But he 63 pitches, you want to see that come down a little, see him get a little more efficient, but 7 Ks in three innings is 7 Ks, right? Like that's, you can see Paulette's stuff is feeling good. It's ticking up a little. He's just got to start finding more command for it, right?
Yep. And this was my first visit of the year to Winston. So it was my first chance to catch up with their manager, Guillermo Quiroz. And when I saw him last year for the first time, you know, I said, so who's the guy to watch this year? And he said, Michael Turner. So this year I said, all right, who are the guys to watch this season? And he said, you know, at the plate, Samuel Zavala, and pitching, Peyton Paulette.
So, well, those are good guys to mention, and that leads us perfectly into Samuel Zavala. Another guy, the third piece with Uriarte and Thorpe that was acquired in the Dylan Cease deal. Kind of the, you know, the add-on piece, right? A super young, lots of upside, but definitely still raw to a degree. Zavala had a good week. Zavala had some really nice plays in the field, had a few nice hits, and just generally, you know, starting to find his rhythm, I would say. I think it hasn't been excellent for him at the plate, but I don't know if you saw that one catch he made, Jeff, but that one catch he made was one of the better catches of the year, I'd say. That was phenomenal. He looks really comfortable in center field, which is just good to see in general. Like, he doesn't look like a player who's figuring it out in center. He looks like a guy who's ready to play center field, like 100%. The athleticism, the range, the twitchiness, he seems like he gets a good first jump on the ball when he's in center. And he's just, you know, slowly but surely starting to work at the plate. It hasn't been like, he's not mashing, right? But he's drawing good at bats. He's got a few nice hits. He had a nice double in his last game of yesterday. And he's just, you know, everything, it's a player. He's a player that we know is going to just keep showing a little bit more and more, I think. Right.
Yeah. Guillermo really was enthusiastic about him. He said, you know, he's already a team leader. You know, he's been there 2 weeks. He's a team leader. He's had a lot of power. And I said, you know, the knock against him is the hit tool. And he goes, yeah. He said he shortened up his swing, and so he's making better contact. So he's pretty optimistic there.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome stuff to hear. I think he's someone that we wanna keep watching. And then the other guy I want to mention before we move on to Kannapolis is Jacob Gonzalez, right? Jacob Gonzalez, the first round pick, right? He has made some swing adjustments. He's working on some things. He looks good. He looked a lot better this week than he did the first week of the season, and he looks more comfortable at the plate, which is the biggest thing for him, is seeing those adjustments. He talked to me in Arizona about how he changed his lower half a little bit. He's adjusted the timing on his lead foot and the way he kind of strides. And then I think, I don't know this for sure, but I think he's made a little bit of a hand adjustment to where his hand placement is and just the timing of his hands. He looks more comfortable, and this was a solid week from him. We got to see him tap into a few more. He had a really nice swing on a double this week. He had his first home run this week, right? Like it was a very quality week from him. And I think it was a sign of hopefully more things to come from him. He hit .429 this week. He was 9 for 21 in addition to three walks. So he got on base at a .500 clip this week, Jeff. So after a rough first series of the season, Jacob Gonzalez had a heck of a week. And honestly, now that I look at the numbers even more, he had a case for minor league hitter of the week, honestly.
Yeah, and some other interesting stats. Of course, his first home run of the season. It was the only home run Winston hit last week. He had three walks and only three strikeouts, so he's making a lot of contact. I think I posted, I'm pretty sure I posted a video of him in the batting cage, and I mentioned that I don't really recall what's different from last year, but I really like the swing this year. I mean, it looks really, really very fundamentally sound.
Yeah, he looks comfortable. He got on base every game this – he got a hit, actually, in every game this week. So in six games this week with Winston-Salem, he got a hit in every game. He had two hits in three of those six games. And just some line drives, consistent at-bats, just looked like a very – experienced baseball player this week. I think you started to see some of that. And I think, you know, a lot of fans were quick to jump on last year when the numbers were really rough. But this is more of the Jacob Gonzalez that the White Sox drafted and the White Sox kind of targeted as a guy who could be a quick riser. So I think, you know, the way he looks right now is encouraging. It was a great week from him. And I'm just excited to see more and more of him because I think we could see some more power start to come. That homer was encouraging. The double that he smoked was encouraging. But I think we're going to start to see a little bit more and more from those extra base hits and hard hit balls.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'm really happy for him. And again, looking forward to getting back up there in 2 weeks.
Definitely. Heading over to Kannapolis, our last team to talk about today. We talked Aldrin Batista. That was the best start of the week for sure. You were able to see Seth Keener in person. Can you tell me a little about what you saw from Keener? I know his first start we talked about last week was great. He struggled a little bit more this week. The command was a little iffy, but what were some of the key takeaways you had from seeing Keener in person on Friday?
Well, you know, first of all, it wasn't a particularly good start, but he was nice enough to still come out and chat with me after the game. I really appreciate that. And, you know, we talked about his pitch mix. He said he didn't really throw his two seam or his change up much, but he's excited about the two seam. He thinks that's going to be a really good pitch for him. But he couldn't really spot the four seam and he couldn't, and as he said, he got a lot, two strikes on a lot of guys and just couldn't put them away. And it was pretty clear that Greensboro was just laying off all his breaking pitches, sitting on the fastball. And so they hit him pretty hard. But, you know, he's a young guy. I think he's, you know, still got a lot of potential. And, you know, I'm really curious to see what the next start is like after he realizes he needs to make some changes to his pitch mix and his approach. So, you know, let's see what he learned from this outing in his next one.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that he did a decent job limiting the damage, right? Five walks could have been a lot more runs. Like, it's not like he gave up seven runs or anything, right? He did a decent job limiting it to an extent. And I think, like you said, it's just getting back in and this week and thinking about his adjustments, trying to work in those change up and that sinker a little bit more, kind of mixing up his pitches a little bit better. And this is a guy, like, you got to remember, right? He was a reliever in college. And he was a reliever who could get away with fastball slider the majority of the time because he was throwing shorter spurs and he was throwing out of the pen. He was piggybacking, you know, some of the best starters in the country at Wake Forest, right? So transitioning to being a starter for him, it's going to take some time to establish a four pitch mix and you know, the versatility in his arsenal in a way that'll work effectively in a full five inning spurt, right? So it's going to take time with him. I think trying to, when I talked to him last year after he got drafted, like he was like, he really wants to be a starter. And I think he completely can be, but it's not as simple as just, oh, now you got to start. You got to think about your arsenal and you got to adjust the way you pitch. And the timing of which pitches you select is not the same when you're trying to get through five innings as when you're doing one or two innings in college, right? So it's a big adjustment. I think he's got a lot of upside and a lot of things to work with still.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Elijah, we've talked about how interesting this rotation is in Birmingham, how interesting the rotation is in Winston. They've got a really great rotation here in Kannapolis. I know we're going to get into some of the other guys, but it's really exciting. All three levels, there are complete rotations of interesting guys, you know, 15 to 20 guys of interesting arms. And that is so refreshing and so different.
No, you're 100% right. That's exactly right. I mean, I know I've been talking a lot about Winston and Birmingham, but you're totally right. Like, the four players we're highlighting in Kannapolis today are all four starters, right? So there's really strong starting pitching depth in this system in a way that we have not seen over the past few years. It's always been, you know, where is the starting pitchers coming from? Are we going to sign guys? Are we going to trade for guys? Whatever. And like right now, like there's a pipeline at each level of young starters that have a chance to be big league pitchers. And that's exactly what any good organization should have, is a consistent stream of starting pitchers, because especially in this era right now, like you never know with pitching. Pitchers are getting hurt more than ever. There's a lack of depth in a lot of organizations. The season is going down the drain for certain teams these days because they don't have enough pitching depth. And if you lose one or two of your guys, you're in a situation where you don't know what to do with your pitching. And pitching depth, you can't have enough of it. So it's really exciting to see a rotation at all these levels with strong pitchers. The next guy, speaking of pitchers, Jake Peppers, another guy that's a draft pick from this past year, very minimal pedigree, I would say, right? A 9th round pick, Jacksonville State, not a big school. I got to talk to him last year. He's one of the more interesting dudes that I've talked to in the organization. Just a really fascinating guy, super, you know, homey, he's from Alabama. He's from Birmingham. So he grew up watching the Barons. Just someone who, you know, is just kind of gets the job done, goes in and does his thing. Very, very minimal, very low key from what I got sense from him. And had a great first start, right? 5 innings, no runs allowed, 3 hits, 3 strikeouts. Just keeps the ball in the zone, looked steady, looked consistent, just looked comfortable. So I think a great first start from Peppers as a guy who, you know, is an older guy. He's already 22, right? So I think Peppers is someone who we could see rise pretty quickly because he has that level of college experience and he's been around, he's been a starter. And he just looked really, really strong in his first start, I thought.
Yep. Absolutely.
And it was 42 strikes and 65 pitches. So 65 pitches across 5 innings, and you know, with 42 of those being strikes, it's pounding the zone. It's efficient in a similar way that Batista had. It was another guy who was just really, really efficient and just attacking the zone when the way he wanted to. Right.
Right. And I guess we might as well touch on the last two guys, Drew McDaniel, 5 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts.
Yep.
And, Keener was a 3rd round draft pick. The 5th round draft pick was Lucas Gordon, and he had a start, 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts. So
yeah,
that's a terrific starting staff. And, you know, there's still other guys to come from Arizona. We haven't seen Opper yet. We haven't seen Lacombe. There's still some arms out there.
Yeah, the pitching depth is really exciting and really encouraging so far. Like you said, McDaniel and Gordon were both great again. That's Gordon's 2nd start of the season. They've both been really, really good. 9 strikeouts is exciting to see. And also 6 innings, 79 pitches, 54 for strikes, right? So that's every guy in the rotation, aside from Keener, who struggled with the command a little bit, was super efficient this week. I mean, really just guys pounding the zone, using their stuff to get swing and miss, right? But also just attacking the zone at the best of their ability. So it really, really great stuff from the Kannapolis pitching staff this week. You know, it didn't result in a bunch of wins necessarily. Their record was not the best this week, but at the same time, like it was solid, right? They had played some good games. They looked like a solid team, especially from the starting pitching perspective of a rotation that looks great. And like we've said, three rotations in the organization that all look really good and more guys to come. So great week from the pitchers, especially, and something we're going to keep watching. But all those guys we highlighted are exciting. They're fun. And there's a lot more to come. And, you know, now we get our first taste of all these guys we've been talking about in the pitching depth in the major leagues. So I can't wait. I'm going to go home right now and watch Nick Nastrini start tonight. And then tomorrow we're going to get to see Jonathan Cannon start. So it's a good time to, I won't say it's a good time to be a White Sox fan. It's a good time to be a fan of the White Sox farm system. I'll put it that way.
Well said.
Any more thoughts, Jeff, on this week?
No, it was just, great to get to Kannapolis and Winston and see these guys up close and personal. One note, unrelated to all the prospects, you know, the manager in Kannapolis is Pat Leland. His dad, Jim, just got elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. So it was fun talking to him about that. And I said, will you be able to go? You've got games that weekend. He said, the White Sox give them. Managers 3 days off a year. He said that's when he's going to use his 3 days off.
That's awesome. That's good to hear. That's very cool. That's a cool little tidbit to hear from Pat. That's awesome. That's cool stuff. If for everybody that's listening, make sure you're following Jeff at AAA Jeff on Twitter. He is going to be at Kannapolis, Charlotte, and Winston-Salem all season. You really can't beat it. Jeff is talking to players. Like I said, he talked to Keener. He got to talk to Ronnie Hernandez, who's one of my favorite young prospects in the system. Jeff is really cranking out the content in Carolina. So make sure you're following along with Jeff, because he is going to be bringing some White Sox prospect content to you all season long. And make sure you're following us at Future Sox on Twitter and the Future Sox Roundup, the Future Sox podcast, Hot Takes and Heaters. We've got tons of White Sox content coming out all the time at Future Sox. That is all for today's episode of the Roundup, and we will talk to you next week.